Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour, Dr. Jan Pohl, has been a practicing veterinarian for almost 40 years. He runs his own practice in rural Michigan and has been doing so since 1981. He's the author of, great title, Never Turn Your Back on an Angus Cow, My Life as a Country Vet. And many of you know him because he's a star of the National Geographic television show The Incredible Dr. Pohl. He's a native of the Netherlands, where he grew up on a farm. He went to veterinary school at the University of Utrecht. And he has some very interesting things to say about his early years when, of course, the Netherlands was occupied by the Nazis. He has spent, he said, his whole life being with animals as a vet, as an owner, until they start inventing new animals. I think I can say there isn't a type of animal that I haven't looked in the eyes and wondered how it was feeling. That's great. Before we meet him, we just thought it would be fun to have you put pictures of your particularly large animals. If you're on a farm somewhere and you'd like to post a picture of your dairy cow or your horse, or we would really like to see those. I mean, really like to see those. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, so make us happy and put some pictures of your animals up there, and we can see them at the end of this show. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Pohl. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Dr. Jan Pohl, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you for inviting me, Kathleen.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So who knew growing up on a farm in the Netherlands where your life was going to go, right? Here you're a television star, a veterinarian, and a TV star.
Well, yes, that was something that I never dreamed of. But, hey, we roll with the flow and just keep going.
Absolutely. And you write, interestingly, in the early part of your book about those early years on the farm in the Netherlands, where you got to know animals. And I found it fascinating that the country was under Nazi occupation, so you were hiding Jews on your farm, weren't you?
Yes. There was one Jewish boy that, you know, hey, I was 2.5 when the war ended, so I didn't know too much.
Mm-hmm.
But, yes, he was just there as a little boy, as a brother in between the youngest brother that I had, and was just part of the family, so nobody knew anything different.
Mm-hmm. But you had to be very careful because it was not everything on your farm was literally for the occupiers, right? And you had to be careful about what you said. You had to be careful about what everybody saw, those who were the occupying force.
That's exactly right, yes. We were really fortunate in my family. My father was too old, and my brothers were too young to be drafted by the Germans to work in the factories. But a lot of men that had to go to Germany to work in the factories. Like I said, I don't have many memories. I still remember the drone of the airplanes at night going over the Netherlands to Germany to bomb the cities. That I still can remember.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, no, not much.
Mm-hmm. And you come from a family of people who have been on farms. I like the story. Tell us more. I believe it would have been your great-grandfather who your mother said could hypnotize animals?
Yes. He had jet black hair. And they actually, his nickname was Horse Mane, like the manes of a horse,
right.
Black.
Yeah.
And there was a butcher who had one of those big, mean dogs that people used to have in those days. And they met each other on the road, on the street, and the butcher said, you know, be careful, this dog will bite you. He says, turn him loose. And he looked the dog in the eye, and, you know, the dog took a step towards him and stepped back. And after that, the dog was completely worthless.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
So the butcher was quite upset with my great-grandfather.
I would imagine.
But so, that was probably almost in the mid-1870s, something like that.
Mm-hmm. You also write about being in vet school at the University of Utrecht in the 1960s. It's interesting how we learn some things. A farmer brought a cow to your clinic. The cow wasn't eating, wasn't making manure. And you learn to be, you say, a hands-on veterinarian from that particular experience. What was that experience, Dr. Pohl?
Well, see, when I was there, the education was mainly large animal.
Uh-huh.
And, yes, the farmers in the neighborhood, or actually all over the Netherlands, could bring their animals to the vet school, and they would be basically treated for a nominal fee,
mm-hmm.
just about, you know, free of charge, because they knew that students would work on them. So this farmer brings this cow in from the neighborhood, and the cow has all the signs of what they call heartware, which means that the cow was swallowed either a wire or a nail. And when that drops in the stomach, then that stomach is only a couple inches away from the heart.
Oh.
But they do call it H-A-R-D, heartware. And most of the time it's metal. Well, anyway, all the symptoms were there. The cow had a fever, you know, the cow had pain in the belly, and the cow was not eating. So, yes, those symptoms are all indicating heartware. But we had a brand new X-ray machine that they found that was big enough to shoot right through cows. So it went to radiology. They took an X-ray, and it says, nope, there is no metal in there, nothing. So it went back to internal diseases, and it was the same diagnosis. That cow has heartware. In those days, we also did surgery, where we just cut them open on the left side and cut open the rumen, that's the big stomach that holds all the food for the cow,
uh-huh.
and reach in there up to your elbows, no, up to your armpits, that far, and pull that metal out.
Then oh, my goodness.
Cow, yeah, by hand.
Oh.
And now we do it differently. We put a magnet down that takes the metal out. But anyway, in those days, we did surgery, and we did many of them. And, but yes, you know, they like to see that there is metal in the cow, and then it would be indicative that you had to do surgery. Well, anyway, came back, all the symptoms were there, went back to radiology. They took another X-ray. No, we can't find any metal in that cow. You guys must be wrong. Well, after a week of going to internal diseases, my next rotation was pathology. And that's where we did the autopsies. And lo and behold, on the table is laying a stomach and the heart of a cow that died in the clinic.
Mm.
And the cow died of heartware. Except it wasn't metal, it was a broom bristle.
Mm.
One of those hard 6-inch brooms.
Right.
And that had done the same thing as a nail or a wire. But because we listened to the people that's supposed to know everything from radiology, the cow died.
Mm-hmm.
If we had used our common sense, we would have done surgery, would have pulled the thing out, and the cow would have lived.
Mm.
And I tell you, listen. It's fine to have machines and do testing that help you make a diagnosis, but use your common sense. And that taught me right from the start that, yes, you know, hands on, listen to the cow. They will tell you what's wrong.
Yeah. Well, why don't the cows exhibit some common sense and not eat broom bristles or metal?
A cow isn't indiscriminate eater.
Really?
Yes. If you put a bucket of nails in with the food, they'll eat all the nails.
They
too.
Will?
Yes.
Why that would they do
just,
that?
That tongue just mows everything in front of them into their mouth, and they swallow it.
Ooh.
Then they lay down, and then they regurgitate their food and chew their cut, and then swallow it again. So, yes, they're very indiscriminate eaters. And this is why they have heartware.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I can tell you another story about
please
that.
Please do. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this cow that had a big calf, and she did not drop the afterbirth. So after about 3 days, the farmer calls me that the cow is sick. And the cow has a high temperature and has all the symptoms of a very bad uterus infection. So I treat the uterus infection thinking that's it because you know, that was the obvious thing. And 4 days later, he calls up that the cow is dead. And I said, that's impossible. That uterus infection would not have killed that cow. So I'm going out there, and I do an autopsy. And lo and behold, here we have another cow that had heartware. And actually, it went right into the heart. Oh. And when she had a calf, you know how they have to push hard to get the calf out?
Right.
Well, that pushed that nail right through the wall into the heart.
Oh.
So, yes, if you see one thing, do not rule out another one.
Oh.
And this is also the reason that I do an autopsy, because, first of all, I want to know where I made a mistake. And I want to have the farmer also see why the cow died, so he's not he doesn't have any doubt about what we did.
Mm-hmm. Oh my, that's kind of quite a story. So are cows not very smart? I hate to say that because I really think cows are beautiful to look at, but it seems as though they could be a little more discriminate, right?
Yeah, but we are not supposed to. See, the cow is just like the buffalo. He was roaming, the grasslands. And in the olden days, there would not be any metal laying around.
Oh.
The occasional rock or stone that goes with it doesn't hurt.
Right.
But we put the metal in their way.
Yeah. So we're not very smart. Well, I guess that's
right.
True. That's true.
the horse is the opposite. You can put a handful of oats in a bucket of nails, and he will not eat one nail.
Huh. Oh, that's fascinating. So I don't know who said this. Oh, your father actually said this. And I'm wondering how you learned this and if you think that most of us treat our animals as they should be. You learned from your father, you write, that if a farmer doesn't have respect for an animal, that animal will not work for him. If you don't treat an animal right, that animal won't treat you right either.
That's correct. If you abuse your animals, either by yelling, by beating, because you have a bad temper,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen that, then these cows are very nervous when they come in the barn to give milk, and they don't give milk.
Oh.
And basically, that is the main stable income from a farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So if he feeds the cows, but he doesn't get anything in return, he'll be out of business in
mm-hmm.
no time flat.
Yeah. So how do you, I know you make a distinction and you're seeing because the business has changed so there aren't as many small farms anymore and you're seeing a lot of animals that are pets, but talk about the distinction and how you've had to make it again and again between those animals that we have for our livelihood because it's what we eat, we drink their milk, and those animals we just have because we love them and it's our place on earth to love our animals. Is that hard for you as a farm vet, a big animal vet at times? Or can you make the separation?
No. That for me, there's no separation.
Mm.
Because, yes, in a farming environment, if the cow cannot produce, you basically do not do the surgery if it needs surgery or something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Then the cow, if it's not sick, get shipped out. Otherwise, you treat the cow when they get sick until they get better. And then, if they don't produce milk and they're not pregnant, then many times they get shipped out. And this is why we have all these withdrawal times for antibiotics. And yes, the people at the slaughterhouses, if they suspect anything, will test the urine of these cows and make sure that there is no, illegal, you could call it, antibiotics in there. And this is a very important thing where we protect the John Q. public from eating tainted meat.
Mm-hmm.
And in small animals, or even other animals, sometimes farm animals that are pets, yes, you treat them a little differently because that it doesn't make any difference whether they come back in production.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you are important to keep them alive and make them healthy again. So it makes no difference there. But there again, you do what you can, but I am not one that will try to prolong the life of a animal that is so sick that the quality of life is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've said so many times in the show, animals are not afraid to die. When they get old, when they get sick, they just sometimes wander away. And that happened to one of my colleagues that was working here. This veterinarian, the lady, had three dogs, and one was an older dog that, yes, was, you know, getting old, but still was all right. One evening, they let the dogs out, and the old dog never came back, and they never found her.
Hmm.
And most likely, that dog just wandered away, laid down, and just died on its own.
Yeah.
And animals, in that way, are a lot smarter than people. They know when the end is near.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't know that we can help them. They don't know we have medicine. So it all depends what's wrong with them, whether we can treat them or not. But the dog itself thinks, hey, you know, I think I'm going to die, and it won't be long. And they just wander away, lay down, and find a place that is secluded and die.
Yeah, except they don't know about dying, right? That's one of the amazing things.
They know about dying, but they accept it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's welcome phone calls. Dr. Jan Pohl is our guest. He has a book. Many of you have already said on our Facebook page that you've seen his television show. And it's an amazing story, and we have yet to get to it, of how this country vet is on this television program. It's all because of his son. And the television program looks at him making the rounds and helping animals with birth. And it's very real. It's a realistic show. It's on National Geographic. And the book coincides with the premiere, the fourth season premiere of his TV show. The book is Never Turn Your Back on an Angus Cow. We asked you to compliment this program, to put pictures on Facebook, and KP says that our Facebook page is, I can't see it till after the show, is blowing up. We have received posts of baby piglets and horses and dairy cows, and please, yeah, keep them coming. Let's look at those all afternoon. We're looking for goats, sheep, and other farm animals. And we'll ask Dr. Pohl. Last week he was treating a hedgehog. Somebody had a hedgehog as a pet. All the animals that he's treated almost every animal, snakes and alligators and everything. We'd love to see a photo of your hedgehog if anybody has a hedgehog. But put the cows up there. Put the horses up there. Let's look at them all afternoon. Thanks. That address is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Our on-air phone number, please call us if you'd like to join the conversation with Dr. Jan Pohl. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Particular call for those of you who are farming in the state of Wisconsin. What do you do when your large animal gets sick? Are there enough veterinarians? Do they come to you? Are there times when you have to take your large animal to a veterinarian? Let's just explore this whole area. We do a lot of shows about our dogs and cats, but what about our horses and cows and goats and hedgehogs, for that matter? To your calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We welcome phone calls for Dr. Pohl, 800-486-8655. Post your pictures of your farm animals on our Facebook page, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Let's go to Pete in Madison, our first caller. Hey, Pete.
Hi, Kathleen. Great show.
Thanks, Pete.
I wanted to ask Dr. Pohl on a show. It seems like dogs are always running into poison.
Dogs are what? Hello, Pete? Porcupines.
Dogs are running into porcupine quills.
Right. Okay. You read his mind. You've got ESP, too.
Right. Yeah, I heard the first part of it, and then he got cut off. Yes. In Michigan here, we have a lot of porcupine, and the dogs, yes, they get into it all the time. It has something to do with the full moon, too. It seems like when there's a full moon and it's light at night, those animals move more. And then you get the dogs that get see it, and they, you know, try to bite it, and here they come again.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do about it?
Well, because you can do two things. You can actually, you know, I've people that don't have the money and do it themselves, they put like a broom handle in the back of the dog's mouth so he can bite, and with needle-nose pliers start pulling them out. But it hurts like the dickens.
Oh.
So what we have to do, we just give them a combination of tranquilizers, which is a very short-lasting anesthetic, pull them all out, give them some antibiotics, and send them home sleeping.
So you have to tell me, Dr. Pohl, because it's a strange coincidence that you have this television show on National Geographic. It's because of your son, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, Charles, my son, was infatuated with movies ever since he was a child. And he wanted to become a movie producer, so he went to the University of Miami, went to L.A., and then the writer's strike came and all this. And, yes, that was the end of his career in L.A. So 5 years ago, he came to us and says that he should make a reality show about us. And I was one of, yeah, right. Who wants to watch this old guy working? He says, well, you may be surprised, and we all are.
Pleasantly surprised. But
yes,
that was a big thing for you to open up your practice to cameras who are following you everywhere, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. The thing is, the people that are here now, most of them have been here all the time, right from the very first.
Mm-hmm.
And they almost are like family. And so, yes, when they go away for 3 weeks, because then we start filming again, it's just like, hey, we're back here. Good to see ya. And we all go together. And, yes, because of the fans being so enthusiastic about the show, I keep going.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
Yeah, I'll bet it's fun. Tim is next in Westie. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Kathleen, and thank you, Dr. Pohl, for being on this program. It's highly informative, and I love the title of your book, because I learned that lesson the hard way. I grew up on a farm that had Hereford cows in Sparta, and was very trusting of them. My uncle had Angus cows, was very trusting of them growing up. We now have some property that a very good neighbor has an Angus cow-calf operation on. And I was once walking in the spring with my dog in the woods, and one of the cows had gotten out of the pasture and into the woods to have her calf in privacy. And
yes,
I came upon her like a day after this, walking down the same tractor path that I was walking down, so we're walking towards each other. I stepped to the side to let her go by and foolishly was hanging on to my dog, and the dog got a little nervous. I turned my head to tell my dog not to worry about it, and I didn't have the words out, and the cow had attacked me.
Ooh.
I kind of wish there was a recording of the sound I made, because I thought it was going to be the last sound I made. But luckily my dog ran off, and then the cow quit grinding me into the ground.
Oh,
yes.
I've since learned not to turn my back on an Angus cow.
I know. It's not a foolish title.
No, I guess it's not.
No. And if you're out in the open, definitely, do not run, because they will run you down. Be like a matador, like the Spanish matador. Face them. If they charge you, sidestep. Now, that sounds a crazy idea, but just recently I had to do that because somebody brought an Angus steer into the clinic that was sick, and they had it in an open stock trailer. And I could look at him, and yes, he didn't feel good, but he was feeling good enough that he didn't want anything to do with me. But yes, we still had to look him over. So I says, okay, lock me in. So they let me in the trailer and closed the door behind me, and I threw the rope, and thank goodness I got it over his head the very first time. And at the same time, he charged me.
Oh, my gosh.
And, yes, rather than just standing in the corner, I just actually moved towards him and then sidestepped. And then actually we played Ring Around the Rosie about three times until I had the rope to the outside of the trail and then told him, wrap it around something and pull. Well, that's how we caught him. But, yes, if I would have just run from him or stepped in the corner of the trailer, I probably would have had some broken bones.
Oh, my. Are there many animals who will charge, Dr. Pohl?
Many animals No.
No.
You know, but because we are estranged as a veterinarian, most of the time we smell like blood because of surgeries and everything. And yes, you can wash your hands 10 times and the animal still smell blood on your hands.
Huh.
Then they are nervous. So it is not always that they are mean. It is just that they are scared or nervous, and they try to either run away from you, and when they can't, they'll charge you.
Hmm. Thank you, Tim, very much for your call, giving us in vivid detail why the book was named the way that it was. Thanks, Tim. Lynn in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Doctor, I would like to ask you, I have my horse, she is 28 years old, and we tested her last year, and she does have Cushing's disease, and she's doing well now. We're not treating her for the Cushing's, but at 28, she's going to die at some point pretty soon. But I wonder about how to, you know, bury her, especially if she dies in Wisconsin in the winter. And I also have two sheep, Annabelle and Isabel, who are Beauty's friends.
Aww.
And Isabel has had urine scald on her back end for about 3 years, and I treat it. I crutch her rear end,
yeah.
And then I put, you know, some spray on it or some apple cider vinegar, and that's doing well now. And thankfully, she's still living. But I just wonder about when both of them or all of them die. I don't want to have them rendered, and I'm wondering what the best way to dispose of their bodies.
Yeah. there are rules and regulations that I'm not familiar with in Wisconsin, of course. But if there is, like here in Michigan State, in Michigan, they will actually cremate your animal.
Mm.
And I'm not sure if there's any places like this in Wisconsin, but in the wintertime, that would be actually a way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the summertime, I don't know what the laws are about burying animals there are. You know, here it is that they have to be so far away from any dwelling. But, yes, most of the time, if you are allowed to bury them, a backhoe will punch through the snow and the crust and don't make a hole deep enough to bury them.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine somebody will call with, if not the specific information, someplace you can call to get the specific information on your important question. Thank you, Lynn, very much for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Dr. Jan Pohl, television star on the National Geographic Channel and author of Never Turn Your Back on an Angus Cow, My Life as a Country Vet. He is with us this hour, and we're welcoming phone calls. The episode that I was watching has you examining, of all things, a sick hedgehog. It's hard to believe that somebody would have a hedgehog as a pet, but you've seen all kinds of things.
Yes.
Had you ever seen...
see all kinds.
Had
but
you
Kathleen,
seen... Yeah.
One thing, it's not on Net Geo. It's on Net Geo Wild.
I'm sorry. Net Geo Wild.
There's definitely a difference between the channels, okay?
Okay.
Net Geo Wild.
Got it.
But yes, hedgehogs are nocturnal animals. And most of the time, they have the little African hedgehogs who actually make better pets than many others. Europe has also hedgehogs, but they're nocturnal and they hibernate.
Hmm.
But these little Africans, where it's warmer, do not always hibernate. So, yes, they make better pets, and they're cute little animals. And those porcupines don't come off.
Oh, they don't?
That is like
oh.
hair. They stay on.
Oh, that's
yes.
good. So you've seen, you've seen an amazing number of animals, amazing variety of animals.
Yes.
What have you seen that we wouldn't have expected that you had seen?
Basically, you know, everything.
Hmm.
Because, that, you know, what I've said many times, there's basically three types of animals. There's the omnivore, like a human and a pig that eats everything. Then there is, you know, the carnivore, like the dogs and cats, the meat eaters, and the herbivores, like the cow and the horse, that eat grass. So basically, these animals are, you know, in three different categories. And yes, you know, then there is little variations between species, but that's not that that hard to discern.
Mm-hmm. And you've had to treat animals that once you may have been afraid of, like snakes.
Yes. You know, that was another thing. Back in the Netherlands, we had the poisonous snakes, and as a kid, it was always, there's a snake, stay away.
Yeah.
And here we have a lot of, you know, snakes that are not poisonous. And it doesn't take much to get used to them. Snakes, you know, most people think they're wet and slimy. They're not. They're dry and like sandpaper almost. But the strange thing is that a snake will respond to its owner.
No.
Yes.
Really?
They know, you know, even with a little head and their little brain, they know who the owner is and who feeds them. And that makes all the difference. They are not friendly in the case that they don't come up and snuggle up to you, though they love your body heat, you know. But, yeah, they don't purr. They don't bark. They're
no.
very quiet. But as a pet, yes, I can see people having snakes. The biggest problem is snakes live so long.
How long?
Well, some of those boas that they had in Florida can live, you know, 40, 50, maybe longer years.
No.
And this is what people don't realize. And this is the thing. When you have a pet like this, don't turn them loose in the wild, because that happened in Florida, and now we have all these snakes in the Everglades.
Yeah, well, you'd have to make sure in your will that you gave your snake to somebody who would really want your snake.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
I mean, I can't imagine that would be a whole lot of people, but I might be wrong. Let's go to Jeff in Fox Lake. Hi, Jeff.
Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to thank the doctor for his veterinary work, first off. I've been a dairy farmer my whole life. I guess you can't state enough how important it is to have good veterinary help when you need it, and sometimes it's all hours of the day, including early mornings or late nights.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to touch on the fact that he really revealed something to me. I have several cows here that won't ever be leaving here just because I've become so attached to them over the years. It was very revealing for him to state the fact. I guess I always knew it, but sometimes you have to hear someone say it, how an animal isn't afraid of death. That'll make it a lot easier when it comes time. I have one that's relatively close. I think she's got a few years left. But anyway, I've had to do it. I did it once before with a pet cow, and then we did bury her here, which is very unusual for, you know, a commercial dairy, but that's the way it is. You get attached to them.
Well, tell me, Jeff, how do you get attached? Why is it you get attached to some of the cows and others you may not get as attached to?
To be perfectly honest, it may sound a little goofy, but they pick me.
Oh, that's not goofy at all.
You got 60, you know, altogether 140 head here, and these ones that the two, Annabelle I bear and Alice is 16 years old. But those animals, they picked me out when they were, say, 6, 8 months old. They'd follow you around, and then you'd scratch them, and then all of a sudden you were pet. You know, you were buddies.
Yeah, and right. I got you.
they really, boy. And this Alice, she is very particular to me. She really doesn't want anything to do with too many other members of the family. But, you know, if somebody's got trouble with Alice, go get Dad, because she'll listen to him.
Can you put a picture of Alice on our Facebook page? Please?
I will have my wife do that. Yep, we'll get
Please.
That up there.
Thank you, Jeff. I'd love to meet Alice.
I just had to state that because so few people can understand how you can become attached to a large animal other than a horse. But cows are amazing creatures, that's for sure. And I got to agree with the vet and really state the fact that the cows aren't the dumb ones. The people taking care of them are the ones that make mistakes.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. We'll look forward to seeing
Appreciate
Alice.
Appreciate that comment.
Yeah. So has that happened to you too, Dr. Pohl, where an animal has picked you and it's become your buddy?
Well, I was born and raised on the farm, but the farm already went away when I was in college. But yes, there were always certain animals on the farm that were more friendly than others. The opposite is also true.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a cow that doesn't like this person, and every time you try to milk her, she kicks.
Mm.
And, you know, It's a funny thing. You know, this is where the farmer cannot milk the cow, put the milkers on, but his wife can.
Uh-huh.
You know, so, yes, like I said, many times I've said also, the longer I work with animals, the smarter they are getting. Because if you let an animal tell you what it thinks, what it wants, all you have to do is, you know, look at them, and especially dogs and cats, but even the horses and cows, they will let you know what they would prefer you to do.
How, but it is true. Really, how do they let you know that?
Just because the way you watch them, you know, and like this farmer says, these cows choose him.
Mm-hmm.
They followed him. You scratch their head, and cows love it when they scratch their head.
Oh.
You know, many times cows will lick each other and on certain spots where they cannot scratch their own head. And so when you scratch their head, yes, suddenly they like it, and then they are not afraid of you, and then they pick you.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And he mentioned, if you would tell us this as well, I would imagine you've been up all hours of the day and night and traveling some distance to take care of sick animals.
Yes. We have had clients that would milk at night after supper. And be done at 12 o'clock in the morning. They get up at 7.
Oh.
They have breakfast with the kids. The kids go to school. They start milking in the barn.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a 9 o'clock schedule. We also have had people that had a 3 o'clock in the afternoon and 3 o'clock in the morning schedule.
Mm.
And it has happened several times that, you know, they would call at 12 o'clock at night for a calving. I come back and take a shower, go to bed, and get called out at 3 o'clock for the other place that had a down cow.
Oh, my.
Yeah, so then it's a two-hour night, and you just keep working.
Oh, my. Lorna is calling from Verona. Hi, Lorna.
Oh, hi, Kathleen. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show, and I just wanted to say congratulations to Dr. Pohl. He probably doesn't remember me at all, but he took care of my horses in Harbor Beach, Michigan, when I was growing up on the farm quite some years ago. Although he doesn't look a bit older than when I was growing up, but I've aged a little bit. So I just wanted to say congratulations to him on his new book, and I can hardly wait to read it.
Thank you, Lorna.
How many people have you taken, how many animals have you taken care of? Thousands and thousands and thousands, I'm sure, by now.
Yeah. If you count how many animals I've seen, well, there have been days that I've done 350 pregnancy checks in one day.
Woo-wee.
You know, so, yeah, how many animals I've seen, I couldn't even get close to guessing. We've had almost 23,000 clients walk through the front door.
Mm.
Now, that doesn't mean that we still have 23,000 because many have moved away, like Lorna.
Mm-hmm.
But others have, you know, died or gone away. But we are also treating animals that are the fifth generation that come to the clinic.
Mm. And it must be so satisfying to hear somebody from, like, somebody from Verona, Lorna, say that she remembers you and you worked with her horses. And isn't that a good feeling? People remember you.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we left Harbor Beach about 34 years ago. But last summer, we still had people come over from Harbor Beach, especially now that the show is going, just to say hello again.
That's great.
Yeah.
We'll take more phone calls in a moment. Dr. Jan Pohl is our guest this hour. His book, Never Turn Your Back on an Angus Cow, My Life as a Country Vet, has just been released, and it coincides with the fourth season premiere of his television program, which I hadn't seen before. I knew we were going to have him on the air, but on Facebook, people were saying, oh, I love this guy. I watch his show all the time. It's entering its fourth season on National Geographic Wild Station. So that's that. That's what we're talking about. And we have a request, and KP tells me that we have all kinds of goats now, too. 150 goats on Facebook and sheep. Oh, I can't wait to see them. What did you say? And a boa constrictor. Oh, let's just turn it over to the animals. They're smarter than we are anyhow. You can post your animal pictures. And please, your cows who are your pets or your cows that are used for your livelihood, whatever. We just love to see these because we always put our dogs and cats up. But cows and horses and hedgehogs and boa constrictors and sheep and do it. It's fun. 800. No, the Facebook is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. We're having a special event coming up pretty darn soon, so we wanted to tell you about it so you'll have time to register. It's in September in the Milwaukee area, and it's a chance to celebrate Wisconsin Public Radio, to meet me. I'm going to be talking, giving highlights of my over 10,000 interviews just here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So I've had some moments to recall. Larry Mueller will be there. KP Whaley will be there. It's on Thursday, September 25 at the Elm Grove Women's Club. We'll have dinner. Then I'll talk for a while. We'll have some chocolate cake. And we're asking you to register by September 11 at WPR.org/Milwaukee. September 11, WPR.org/Milwaukee. And we hope to meet you there. More phone calls in a moment. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Dr. Jan Pohl. And Maddie is calling from Chippewa. Hi, Maddie.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a hedgehog comment quickly. I know you're running out of time. My little sister has a pet hedgehog, and it is an African hedgehog. And they, as the doctor said, they don't hibernate. But if you allow them to get too cold, they want to hibernate. They're very tricky little pets to take care of. And while they're great pets, I would encourage anybody looking to get one to really research it or take your time before going out buying one.
Yeah, I would agree.
Dr.
Pohl?
Exactly right. Yes. I totally agree with her.
What do you have is in terms of just pets for your family, Dr. Pohl? Do you have dogs and cats? And
yes. We have dogs, cats. Diane has fish. We still have horses that we imported from the Netherlands.
The offspring
is there. Those are the Frisian horses, big, black, beautiful horses.
Mm.
They are getting very popular in the United States now, and even the crossbreds are very fine. They have a tremendous good attitude. And we have, you know, peacocks, we have turkeys right now, we have chickens. Yes, you know, it's a mini farm because I do like my own organic eggs, as I call it.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you know, so yes, we have a little bit of everything to take care of.
Mm. Thanks, Maddie, for your call. Randy is next. Hello.
Doctor, you said a very important thing when you said that respecting your animals is a very, very vital element of farm life, because I was taken by surprise when my son, who had helped me on my dairy farm, told me a few years back that when he had applied to medical school, he had recited several stories of him helping me doctor some of our cattle back to health to the committee that interviewed him for entrance into the school that he wanted to attend.
Yeah.
And they kept quizzing him on these stories as to where I had come up with these cures, which my grandfather had taught me, actually, growing up on our farms in our extended dairy farm family. One that they were fascinated about was with a down cow. We had made slings to raise them up, and like if they had calving paralysis, we'd put the calf in front of the cow just far enough away that she'd struggle to get to the calf and see the calf. And my grandfather used to say, oh, the cow will die of a bad attitude. We have to give it a good attitude to get to want to get up. And
yes.
So rather than just call the rendering truck and have it put to death, he would say, we don't pull a tooth just because it has a cavity. Mm. We fill the cavity. That cow has a place in the herd. We'll struggle with this cow just a few more days here. And of course, I had to clean up after the cow and was saying, oh, just call the rendering truck and get rid of this whole thing, you know. And sure enough, we'd raise the cow up with that sling and be careful with it. And in a few days, the cow would get up and lick the calf. So my son recited those stories, and he told me later it made quite a difference.
Yes. I've had it where, you know, with the calf in paralysis, which actually is a pinched nerve inside the pelvis because the calf is so big, that as long as the cow is crawling around, like you said, crawling to the calf, then they have a chance to get up. And I've had cows that were down for 2 weeks. And, yes, sometimes they have almost what you call bed sores, you know, where the skin is rubbed raw. But if they get up, they'll make it again.
Thank you so much, Randy, for your call. Let's go to Lorna is next in Wausau. Hi, Lorna.
Hello. See, I understand that the big animal vets is kind of a dying breed. So what is the Veterinary Association doing to attract, you know, future veterinarians for cows and horses and large animals?
Good question.
Yeah, good question. Sometimes they are, you know, trying to entice people to go into a large animal by either, you know, giving away some of the debt, the college debt, and I heard that you're talking about that later on.
Yeah.
This is a tremendous burden on many students that come out of vet school, and especially when they go out of state to vet school. And, yes, if that helps out, that's good. The thing is, the people, the vet students have to have a will for it. It is a lot harder work. Many times you don't make as much money. Personally, I think it is just as rewarding as small animal, but yeah, in small animal we can do more because large animal, and especially cows, is still an economical business. But I would like to see a lot more colleges entice students to go into large animal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Lorna, for your call. Mary in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Dr. Poe, I love your shows. I watch them all the time, and I'm so honored to be on the phone with you.
Thank you.
I have a problem. I have two dogs. I have a Newfoundland, and I have a Great Pyrenees.
Ooh.
And the Great Pyrenees, he's 7 years old, and the Newfoundland is 3.5.
Okay.
Fred is the Great Pyrenees. He's the one I'm worried about. I took him into the vet, and I had him all checked out. Physically, he's fine. But he's been the last 2 or 3 weeks, he's been acting real strange. He doesn't want to come in the house. He whines at the door. He acts like a little lethargic, like he's like really depressed and just not himself. I got to physically go outside and drag him in the house. He never wants to stay in the house. And he's a house dog, and I don't know, can dogs get, like, Alzheimer's or kind of problems?
Yes, it seems like that, you know, sometimes dogs, they don't call it Alzheimer's, but it's a cognitive something, you know, that anyway, that they don't remember things like they used to. And don't forget that Great Pyrenees is an outside dog. Summer and winter, they can be outside because their hair coat is so thick that they do not get cold. We had a Great Pyrenees also, and yes, we had him in the house, but if the house was a little too hot, he wanted to be outside, and he would actually go underneath the brush, and dig a cool place in the dirt just to lay there where it's cooler.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much, Mary, for your call. Sometimes we can just listen to them and figure out what's going on. Dr. Pohl, thank you so much for being with us. It was just a fun hour. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen. I appreciate that.
Yes, our pleasure. Dr. Jan Pohl, his book, his TV show is on National Geographic Wild, and his book just released is Never Turn Your Back on an Angus Cow, My Life as a Country Vet. Continue, please, to put your farm animals up on our Facebook page. It'll be ever so much fun to look at them. I want to meet Alice the cow. And that's the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the hour and to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow, first hour, we'll be covering the latest in Syria. Leading U.S. officials believe that we must expand our airstrikes against ISIS into Syria. Journalist Ray Suarez will join us, former senior correspondent for PBS NewsHour, now host of Inside Story with Al Jazeera America. And as we approach Labor Day, we'll be talking about the American worker. Mike Rose is with us. His work, The Mind at Work, Valuing the Intelligence of the American Worker, just published its 10th anniversary edition. Thanks for your calls. Thanks for your Facebook page postings. And thanks for listening. Great conversations ahead here on the Ideas Network.